Muscle, the podcast is starting. Hello and welcome to Podrift, so Tala's a Harry Potter read-along podcast. I am one of your hosts, Joe.
And I'm Cassie.
And today we're going to be talking about Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, Chapter 17, The Heir of Slytherin.
You got it that time.
Yep.
This wasn't the first take.
It never is.
Yeah, you do slur Podrificus a little bit, though.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
You can all suffer.
Yep. So speaking of suffering, it's very hot today. And so we have to podcast with the window open. So if you hear the bird that lives outside of our apartment, specifically on the light that is next to our apartment door, I'm sorry. I'll do my best, but it's very hot.
He's relatively friendly. Yeah, he's just very loud.
I honestly barely notice him, except when we open the window in here.
Yeah, he like hovers and just stares.
Well, isn't this interesting radio?
Oh, yeah.
So well, back to Harry Potter.
We're
going to
be talking a lot about birds today anyway.
That's true. That's a great segue.
But it is my turn to do the chapter summary.
It sure is. Let me get my phone. All right. I have it ready.
Harry sees Ginny pale and unconscious in the Chamber of Secrets. Tom Riddle appears and reveals that he is absorbing Ginny's soul and becoming real. Oh, and he's also a memory of Voldemort that he preserved in a diary. Fox the Phoenix shows up with the Sorting Hat to help Harry. Tom sicks the basilisk on Harry, which quickly gets its eyes pecked out by Fox. Harry gets a sword from the Sorting Hat, uses it to kill the basilisk, gets poisoned, then healed by Fox's tears, then uses the basilisk's fang to kill Tom by stabbing the diary, which saves Ginny. And then they all escape.
Okay. I thought after you said which saves Ginny, because that was like right at like 29 and change. So the "and we all escape" was an illegal summary.
So okay. It also wasn't part of my written summary. I was like, well, I did this kind of fast.
I also like that appears to be written in an email and the subject line is B2CH17.
It is not CH17. It's C17.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But also this is in just a notes app.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know what it's called. It's just in my phone. It's called Notes.
Okay. It really did look like a blank Gmail message. I have some questions. The first is, did you actually write O in your notes?
Yes.
Okay. Just checking. Secondly, what's the name of Dumbledore's phoenix?
Fox.
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 We're saying the same thing.
Okay. It sounded weird when you say it, but maybe it just sounds weird.
It's not Fox. It's Fox. Fox. It's Fox.
Fox.
It's not Fox. Fox. It's Fox.
All of these sound the same to me. We've learned that I can't hear things. Like, physically, I can hear. As far as I know, there's nothing wrong with my hearing. There is something wrong with my Eustachian tubes, as we've learned, but that's a different issue. but as far as, like, hearing nuance in pronunciations, I don't seem to have that ability.
You're also kind of tone deaf.
Maybe it's related. Yes. These are the wonders of getting old. Although I've never been able to hear these things.
Also, like, you're not old at all.
I am. In like first grade, I remember in addition to like writing the spelling words and sentences and writing them five times each, all of which I loved, we would also have to group them according to the vowel sounds in them. So like long O and short O. And I did terribly in all of that because I did not know the difference. And I still to date do not. I am a certified English teacher.
Well, that's a big part of my domain.
Yeah.
And I'm very disappointed. I've got some flashcards. We can practice.
Okay. Yeah. We'll do that later when we're alone.
We'll just do some phonemic awareness.
Yeah. Love it. Okay. So this is a big chapter. A lot happens in this chapter.
Everything happens in this chapter. That's like,
yeah, everything.
Everything is just like rolled up together and wrapped up nicely, put a bow on it.
Yeah. Well, not totally wrapped up. There's still some stuff straggling at the end. But yeah, let's try to not make this a 2-hour long episode. We're not doing well.
I mean,
already.
I pretty much covered it all. So I don't know if there's much that
stop.
We need to talk
yeah.
about. Yeah.
okay. So a lot happens. Harry is in the chamber. He sees Ginny laying on the floor, unconscious, and the like ghostly apparition of Tom Riddle is there. And This is the first minor detail that I'm going to hone in on for this episode. It's described, Tom has long fingers.
I don't think I caught that.
Okay. Why do you find that interesting?
I didn't say I did. I said, oh, I don't think I caught that.
Oh, okay.
I'm looking for it now.
There's a search.
A tall black-haired boy was leaning against the
I think it's when he takes
pillar.
Harry's wand and he's like twirling it around. It's
oh, in
like
his long finger?
Yeah, and this is kind of a recurring descriptor that's used for characters. We hear a lot about like knees and noses when the books describe characters, but the fingers thing is something that I believe definitely Dumbledore, but also I think Ollivander have been described as having long fingers.
Better to hold your wand with.
Okay. But I have to wonder, those are all powerful wizards in some way. Obviously, Tom Riddle is very, very evil, but these are three men who are very, very powerful wizards. And so I have to question if there's some kind of relationship there with magical ability, because your hand is in some way like performing magic. But then we don't know if like Hermione has long fingers. I don't remember anything about Hermione's fingers. I don't know. It's just a recurring thing that I picked up on.
It was something I did not notice at all.
Okay, well, that we'll add it to the pile. I did find a long forum thread from Cos Forums about it. I know, Joe, you don't know what Cos Forums is.
Not
it was,
at all.
MuggleNet. Do you know what MuggleNet is? Okay, Joe shrugged. MuggleNet is like a very
great for
big,
audio.
a very big Harry Potter fan site, and Cos Forums was/is there forums. It's still popular, but as far as I know, you still can't register on it. So. Yeah, it's been around, I assume,
a long time.
They talked about the long fingers thing.
Oh, okay. This is just where you...
Yeah, I'll put a link in the show notes. I just found it interesting because I Googled it. I'm like, why does everybody have long fingers in the Harry Potter series? And turns out I'm not the first one to ask that question.
All right.
Yeah.
But you didn't get an answer.
I mean, no, in an interview, J.K. Rowling did not say, like, I think it's very important that characters have long fingers.
She addresses a lot of things she doesn't need to.
That's true.
Well, I like in the beginning, they go back to Harry keeping his eyes open very slightly.
Yeah, he's like squinting the whole time.
He's just so confident that he can close his eyes faster than he can see something.
Okay. That's not how I would have phrased that sentence. But yeah, no, it is a silly idea. And I know he's looking for like any sign of movement.
Yeah, so hopefully he doesn't see it head first.
Not just like, oh, there's the basilisk. Better close my eyes because I'm going to get petrified. But yeah, it is fun.
Which just brings me back to like, what is the plan here?
To save Ginny Weasley.
Yeah. How? He's just hoping
Harry
to
never
find,
has a plan. Hermione is petrified,
Ginny,
Joe. There is no plan.
And just sneak away.
Yeah. He doesn't know that Tom Riddle is going to be there.
He knows a basilisk is going to be there.
But if he can just elude the basilisk, get out of the chamber, and then be like, hey, there's a basilisk down there. Somebody go deal with this. Somebody more qualified than me. At least he saved Ginny.
Okay.
He's not worried about killing the basilisk.
No, I don't think that's what he set out
to
do. He didn't set out prepared to do that in any way.
They don't know. Like, presumably... the heir of Slytherin is down there, or at least controlling the basilisk and like staging another attack. So like he must know he's going to encounter someone.
I think he was expecting a fight of some sort.
Okay.
But he was not prepared for it in any way.
No, that's the books, Joe.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing.
But like just he's asking the ghostly form of Tom Riddle for help over and over again without noticing how evil
that
he is
like
right
a ghostly
off the bat.
Form. Yeah. Harry trusts Tom a little too much
for a single encounter, by the way, where he framed a friend that he already knows is innocent.
Well, Tom doesn't admit that he framed Hagrid.
No,
a
but
while.
Harry knows that.
But Harry,
that
at
was
least
not true.
Harry, to this point, trusts Tom Riddle.
Yes.
He knows that Hagrid didn't do it. But he could just think that, like, well, the evidence seemed to be stacked against Hagrid and Tom just went with the evidence.
Yes, but
he doesn't necessarily think that Tom is until Tom admits it.
It's just unfortunate how quickly he trusts
right.
Tom, of all people, when like he barely trusts adults. He's like, well, this is also a child.
Well, remember, too, that Harry connects with Tom in that scene with the diary. He's talking about how, like, wow, Tom also doesn't want to go back to the Muggle world. And, like, I kind of look like him. So I think Harry feels that connection with Tom, and he is willing to trust him. On that note, I have some interesting stuff about the diary itself. Tom, of course, in this chapter reveals the true nature of it. Ginny poured herself into it, which is what allows him to regain power and to control her. And I found some quotes from Rowling about the diary specifically. So this one is from an interview from November 2001. The interviewer asked, "What made you think of the idea about the diary?" And Rowling said, "My sister used to commit her innermost thoughts to her diary. Her great fear was that someone would read it. That's how the idea came to me of a diary that is itself against you. You would be confiding everything to pages that aren't inanimate." And then another one from an interview that was on the Chamber of Secrets DVD. The Accio Quote website has it dated as February 2003. And in this one, she says, "The diary to me is a very scary object, a really, really frightening object. This manipulative little book, the temptation particularly for a young girl to pour out her heart to a diary, which is never something I was prone to, but my sister was. The power of something that answers you back. And at the time that I wrote that, I'd never been in an internet chat room. But I've since thought, well, it's very similar. Just typing your deepest thoughts into the ether and getting answers back, and you don't know who's answering you. And so that was always a very scary image to me in the book, and I thought it worked very well in the film. You could understand when he started writing to see these things coming back to him and the power of that, that secret friend in your pocket." That second one is a little weird because it's a transcription, and people don't really talk in complete nice sentences always. Mm-hmm. But I think you get the idea that the diary is meant to be sort of a temptation object, like something that kind of slithers into your ear and tells you the things that you want to hear. That's definitely at least what it did for Ginny.
Yeah.
That Tom is saying, like, I listened to her thoughts and I supported her, and that's how I got her to trust me. So I think that there is a through line there of, first of all, Tom is just super manipulative. And secondly, there's this interaction of the diary with your innermost self that you feel a connection with it because you're bearing your most personal thoughts to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I found that interesting. And I kind of want to question why Ginny was so drawn to the diary.
I don't know. She was writing it. Like, she complained about a lot of things. She was kind of alone. We're not told anything about any of her friends, and she's surrounded by her brothers, who she feels are constantly bullying her.
Yeah, it's sad to me.
Yeah,
I think it really is. And I mean, this isn't really a spoiler, but we don't hear a ton about Ginny's friends moving forward.
We get one friend.
There's one, but it takes a few books.
Yeah. But also, it's very centered around Harry, and I don't think Harry is paying enough attention at all.
No, there's a really good scene in book five that's like, wow, Harry, you're not paying attention at all to Ginny. But I found this quite sad that Ginny goes to the school that she's been so excited to go to, and then when she gets there, she feels so isolated. And she doesn't feel, I think, especially the thing that she highlighted, or at least that Tom highlighted, was that she was writing in the diary about, like, oh, I have this crush on Harry, but I don't think he'll ever notice me. I don't think he'll ever care about me. And it's sad to me that she didn't feel she had a confidant for that. And I guess her closest relationships at Hogwarts are her brothers, who none of them strike me as good confidants for that information.
No, but also they already knew.
And they teased her for it. Right, exactly. That's why they're not good confidants.
But, you know, just because you're writing it in a diary doesn't mean you haven't told anyone else.
But for Ginny, yeah, kind of.
We don't know for sure. We're only getting Tom's perspective on this.
And we don't get Ginny's perspective ever.
Yeah.
But it's just a sad thing. And it feels very true to young girls, I think, that if they don't have that support system of other young women, that it can be really, really hard to be a teenage girl. And I think, too, this is this is maybe me thinking about current events, but Tom has a way of retelling these events. He talks about like how boring it was to listen to Ginny complain about all this stuff. And he says like, oh, I was patient and I wrote back and I was kind and I've always been able to charm people I needed. And it just, he's totally, of course, sidestepping the like very intentional manipulation that he's done to Ginny.
No, I mean, he's upfront about it.
Yeah.
He's not sidestepping it at all.
But he's just making himself up to be like, oh, I'm so charming. It's just a natural skill of mine. It really.
He's absolutely not putting it as like a good thing.
No.
He's saying like he is very blunt about I was able to charm and manipulate her.
Yeah.
To get what I wanted.
Of course. But something about like the gender and age dynamic here between Tom and Ginny just really makes my skin crawl. That idea of like an older man, granted he's mentally and physically in this situation, 16, preying on a young girl and controlling her by making her feel special.
Even 16 to 11 is horrifying.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But just like he's like trying to make her feel special and heard. And that's how he's kind of like sinking his claws in. It's really upsetting.
Yeah. I highlighted that the statue of Salazar Slytherin was not just a giant face.
Yeah. In the movie, it's a giant face.
It's
in
just
this
a
one,
big giant
it's
face.
A person.
So it was weird because like I highlighted at one point, they do say, you know, he craned to look up at the giant face, but then they go on and say, oh, it had a body and a beard and feet.
How tall do you think it is? Because the snake does still come out of the statue's mouth.
Still comes out of the statue's mouth, but you also hear a huge thud as
That's
it hits
true.
The floor.
I was imagining this thing being like huge.
I think it's huge.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that snake drops for a while.
It's also described as monkey-like.
Yeah.
I didn't know what to make of that.
I have no idea.
It just, that's not the kind of word I would think to use to describe like a supposedly like obviously evil, but regal figure.
Yeah, monkey-like with a thin beard. I don't know.
It's a weird one.
It is.
We'll put it in the list with baby dolphin feet and hands the size of trash cans. Monkey-like. Yeah, it's a weird one.
It bothered me how long it took Harry to realize that Riddle was against him.
I mean, Harry, I think in this scene has just tunnel vision of like,
yes, he's,
Ginny is hurt. Need to save Ginny.
He's very focused on that. Like, immediately he throws his wand away to grab
her. Yeah.
Like, I know he probably doesn't know anything for healing, but just throw it away.
Yeah, I think it's more just that, like, Harry, I think instinctually still is not a magic user, if that makes sense.
I guess. Yeah.
I think he has that very, like, not human, because even the magic users are human, but that very, like, physical draw of, like, I have to rescue her. Because also, when he's trying to, like, get Ginny out of the chamber, he's, like, physically lifting her up and, like, buckling under her weight. He knows levitation spells.
I don't know how well his use of Wingardium Leviosa would lift a body.
We talked about this, right? Can you use Wingardium Leviosa on people?
I think it only works on inanimate objects.
Okay, there's another spell I think that they use later that does work on people, but I think it is a different one. So maybe Harry doesn't know a levitation spell, but just, yeah, the idea of him throwing the wand and then, like, struggling to pick up Ginny is...
Yeah.
It's Harry.
Like, it takes him a minute to realize he doesn't have the wand.
Yeah. He's like, hey, did you see this? Like, where'd it go?
Oh, you have it. Can you hand it to me?
Yeah. Thanks for picking that up, Tom. Yeah. Oh, Harry.
And, like, he gets a little annoyed at him. Look, give me my wand back. I might need it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just he's got that blinder up of, like, I have to rescue Ginny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, of course, Tom starts to tell Harry about what a piece of trash he is. Tom also says that it took him 5 years at Hogwarts to like figure out the chamber and find the entrance to it. Where do you think he got this information?
The restricted section.
Okay. I did wonder if maybe like they, in this book, Hermione like searches the library to try to find information on the Chamber of Secrets and can't. So I wonder if perhaps after it was opened 50 years ago, they took out
any kind of information.
Yeah.
Although at that point, I feel like they were still trying to tout it as just a rumor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not that long ago relative to the long history of Hogwarts.
Which does bring me back to Professor Binns being so adamant about this being just a legend.
Like, presumably he was there.
He was absolutely there. There's no way this ghost happened to not be around 50
this, like,
years ago.
Old man ghost.
Yeah.
Nonetheless. So, like, even if he wasn't a ghost at the time, he was presumably teaching at Hogwarts or, like, aware of what was happening at Hogwarts.
He was absolutely teaching at Hogwarts.
But, I mean, the thing is, too, that, like, the official explanation for what happened 50 years ago was not Hagrid opened the Chamber of Secrets, wasn't it? It was that Hagrid had a monster and the Chamber of Secrets stuff was all just, like, legend stuff that they had tapped into.
I don't remember exactly, but I think that was how they wanted to push
it. Yeah. So it's possible that Binns walked away with that official explanation.
I could see Binns not being involved at all in any kind of investigation or
I mean, how could he be? He can't hold things.
But even, you know, if he was alive, he just seems like the kind of person where this is his job.
It's not my business.
And he had his own kind of tunnel vision, and it's reading from a textbook at children who don't care.
Yeah. Tom also gives some good background to the events of 50 years ago. He says specifically that Dumbledore was always kind of wary of him and that Dumbledore believed Hagrid's innocence and persuaded Professor Dippet to allow Hagrid to stay as gamekeeper.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, we know why Hagrid is so loyal to Dumbledore. But I do wonder what that relationship was like between Dumbledore and Hagrid, if there was a relationship at all prior to Hagrid getting expelled.
Hmm. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think that's ever expanded upon.
I don't think it is either.
But I would honestly believe that there's a chance that there was nothing before that.
That's kind of the maybe not impression that I walked away with, but that's what made sense to me knowing Dumbledore's full character as fleshed out through the series. And
Well, actually, at that point, at the very least, Hagrid was his student. He was a transfiguration teacher.
But Tom does also say that Hagrid was, let's say, far from a model student. Mm-hmm. He was, like, always in trouble. He got caught trying to breed werewolves or something.
Yeah, he had werewolf puppies. and he went into the forest to wrestle trolls.
I did read a comment from Rowling specifically that the werewolf thing was a lie. Galadriel had mentioned it in the book that Rowling said it in an interview. I wasn't able to track down the specific interview, but that the werewolf thing specifically was not true.
Okay, it was probably just a rumor.
Yes, yeah. But Hagrid was not really a model student. And I guess maybe I'm thinking about, like, okay, would a transfiguration professor like Hagrid? And I think that I just have that image, that impression of McGonagall so deeply ingrained that I'm like, McGonagall would have hated a student like Hagrid. So
Dumbledore is such a warm, inviting person. And I think he would have cared about literally anyone that came into his classroom.
Okay. Yeah, I wonder about that backstory. I don't think there's anything really.
Yeah, even if they weren't like, very close student-teacher relationship.
He was still aware of him.
Yeah, he was aware of him and clearly trusted him enough.
Yeah, yeah. And I think there may also be an edge to that of Dumbledore knew or at least suspected that Hagrid was falsely accused and wanted to protect him just on that merits. But I don't know. I like to think that they had a good teacher-student relationship prior to that.
Yeah. We'll never know.
Certainly don't want to hear any comments about it from the person who would know. All right. Can we talk about the I am Lord Voldemort thing?
Yes.
There's so much.
He's so proud. He draws. He draws it with a wand in the air and then shuffles the letters around. How long do you think that this kid, because like by
all the different combinations he tried out,
by 16, he came up with this name because he hated his father's Muggle name.
Right.
And was already using it with some intimate friends.
Imagine your friends when you're like 16. You're like, guys, you got to call me Lord Voldemort. No.
He went straight to Lord.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It couldn't just be, you're calling me Voldemort now. Just, hey, I'm Lord Voldemort now.
I am Lord Voldemort.
I am Lord Voldemort.
That too. That,
I carved, like, it into the back of this, cupboard.
He couldn't get the I am letters to fit in nicely somewhere. So he's just like, just make it I am Lord Voldemort. We can't get them in the rest of it. It's very silly. Of course, I believe that 7-year-old me was like, oh my God. this, of course, I think I alluded to this a little bit when we talked about the etymology of the name Tom Marvolo Riddle. I didn't want to talk too deeply about Marvolo because it's just a ridiculous name that Rowling made up when she figured out, like, okay, I want him to be Tom Riddle. How can I get the rest of this to work? We just need to make something up that sounds a little evil.
Yeah. So I think that she wanted, like, what's some generic muggle sounding name?
Yeah.
That uses the letters. And then she used Marvolo as, like, let's just throw the rest of the letters in there in a way that sounds magic-y.
And, like, it does.
Yeah, it works.
But silly.
I am Lord Voldemort.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about this 14-year-old kid being so proud. So, like, it very much reads as, like, I'm 14 and this is deep.
I mean, you had a tag when you were, like, 15, did you not?
A tag?
Yeah. Your little, like, wow thing.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
But, like,
were you not, like, real pleased with yourself when you came up with your tag?
It wasn't really a tag, but sure. I wasn't having people call me that. That was just my initials.
Yeah. I'm going to have to, like, bleep out the initials.
Yeah, you're going to have to.
I'll figure out how to do it. There may be a loud bleeping noise there.
Or you may just cut it out because it's not necessary.
It is relevant, though. Teenage boys come up with dumb stuff. You cannot cast aspersions on.
I can cast this. Aspersions even if I did it. Even if I went around saying, call me Voldemort. I could still say that was dumb.
Okay. Do you think that Tom Riddle's, like, AOL screen name would have been Lord Voldemort? Like, is that the modern day equivalent that we can make a bridge to?
I think because he was using it with just his intimate friends, I would say he was trying to keep it, like, a secret.
Okay. It was his, what was that? Finsta?
Sure. It could be his Finsta.
I realized that I said modern day equivalent and then AOL screen name. So I had to make it relevant for the kids.
Yeah. Modern day is very far from AOL.
And you said I wasn't old. All right. So about the I am Lord Voldemort thing, this, of course, introduced a lot of weirdness when they were trying to translate the book into different languages, because how do you make the anagram work? So I pulled up some stuff. This is from a blog called...
While you're looking at that, I'm just going to think about when someone was translating this into a different language. Do you think they were warned in advance that they had to come up with that anagram, or?
I have some details. Okay. So the blog is titled Adventures on the Bookshelf. It looks like it is by, like, a professor or something. So semi-credible. But yes, I thought this was some good, just conversation about it. So I'm going to read directly from it. So the Croatian, Portuguese, and Polish translations of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets give Voldemort's name as Tom Marvolo Riddle, and then do the anagram sentence in English as I am Lord Voldemort, with an explanation for the readers, saying just, like, this was an anagram in the original writing.
Okay.
The Korean and Japanese versions transliterate Tom Marvolo Riddle into their own alphabets, making it impossible to perform a new anagram in their own language or demonstrate the original one in English, because they use characters, not, like, our letters. Mm-hmm. So, like, the rearranging
doesn't just, like, spin them around. Yeah.
Yeah. So I imagine that would also have to be a footnote of just, like, hey, languages are different. This works in English. It doesn't work here. Many translations, though, go for the more challenging option of changing the name to create an anagram that works in their language. So in Italian, Tom Riddle is Tom Orvoloson Riddle, an anagram of Sonlo Lord Voldemort. In Spanish, he is Tom Sorvolo Riddle, anagram of Soy Lord Voldemort. And in Icelandic, he is Trevor Delnom, anagram of Egger Voldemort. And these obviously work better when you read the actual thing. I will link to the blog post in the show notes. But this blog post goes on. So what does Menard, who I assume is the French translator of the book, do in his Harry Potter at La Chamber des Secrets? I took a year of French and I was very bad at it, so I'm sorry. He takes the more ambitious option and goes for an anagram that will work in French. The sentence that he wants to reveal at the climax of the story is "Je suis Voldemort." And so the name that replaces Tom Morvolo Riddle in the story is, wait for it, Tom Elvis Jedusor. That's right. Voldemort's middle name, if you're a French reader, is Elvis.
And that holds so much power later on. So I love this. I have to look at the French later books to see how that goes. Yeah.
The blog post has a few more details. It's actually cleverer than it may look. Menard has managed to give Tom a real name for his middle name, unlike Rowling's Marvolo, which looks suspiciously cobbled together from the leftover letters she had after she'd come up with Tom and Riddle. And Jedusor is a phonetic spelling of jeu de sort, a phrase that means somewhere between twist of fate and game of chance, and which perhaps also has undertones of the phrase jeté en sort, to cast a spell. So that's actually like, that's pretty good. It's very,
that is pretty good.
It's very silly to us because we're like, Elvis? But I think that's pretty clever of that translator to like not only make it work, but also give it some meaning.
I can't wait to come back to this in
17 years.
Like five books.
Oh, like four.
Four books, you're right.
Yeah.
And get to talk about what they did then.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a full list of like every language that this book has been translated into and how they deal with the name thing. I will link it again in the show notes, but it's worth a scroll through.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this one pulled the most common level languages and the ones that would be the most complicated. And then the one that's particularly interesting. It's still real goofy.
Yeah, the whole thing is, it's a fun reveal, but
it works. We're jaded adults. A kid reading this, they'd probably get a kick out of it.
I'll say, as a child watching those movies, I was impressed.
Really? It played even in the movie? Because I know in the movie they have that visual of like the letters moving around.
They watch them move into the right place. I was impressed.
I remember vaguely as a child like doing it myself to make sure.
To make sure. You got to check.
Yeah. Just to be sure. But yeah, it's fine. It's far from the worst sin that these books commit. On the name Tom Riddle, though, ignoring the Marvolo part, we'll just put that aside.
We've done this already.
I know I've done the etymology already, but Tom talks about it being a name he got from his Muggle father.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is how we bridge the pureblood stuff that's kind of surrounded this book but that we haven't gotten directly from Tom. So Tom refers to his father as a filthy Muggle and seems to only highlight the name that his father gave him, which he then discarded as just like, that's all he ever did for me. That's all he ever gave me. And I threw that away. And so it's not relevant anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't have a Muggle father. And he also really talks up his mom's blood, who is the magical side of him, and that she is a descendant of Salazar Slytherin. And so he seems to be like mentally rejecting his status as a half-blood.
He's still aware of it.
He's aware of it.
He's rejecting his father, but I wouldn't say he's rejecting his status.
Okay.
It reminds me of like Hitler only wanting blonde people and then being brunette himself.
Right. That's my point. I think it's a point of like, here you are trying to supposedly lead this blood purity movement and eradicate the school of like Muggle influence, and yet you're a half blood.
Mm-hmm.
Like your ideology doesn't even work for you. Who are you to go around and play judge and jury about this?
Yeah. And like his mindset is, his father abandoned him before he was born and left his mother to die.
Which is another interesting thing, because this is Tom's version of those events, which we have to question where he got those version of events, because he was raised in an orphanage.
Yeah, he I guess was just told something by the people running the orphanage.
Yeah, that part is hard too. We'll learn more nuance about this, but I think that's something to keep in mind of what Tom tells Harry and then what actually played out in that scene.
But I would take what he said. I almost feel like we should take that at face value.
Okay.
That's what he truly believes happened.
Right.
And that may be the only thing that he was told.
Yes. Whether I it believe was true that or not. This is what Tom thinks is true.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it is actually
true is another thing.
Yeah.
Additionally, what the reasoning he's given for why his father left was because he found out his mom was a witch.
Right.
So it's the hatred of witches that led his father away, and now he has a hatred of muggles.
Right. I think that definitely inspires some of the fear over muggles, that like we cannot coexist with them.
Yeah.
But back to the kind of hypocrisy, I have to question too, with him being a half-blood, did his followers know?
Some of them definitely did.
Okay.
I'm sure that his intimate friends from Hogwarts became Death Eaters, and they were aware of his bloodline.
Okay. I don't know that they were.
No, you think he hid that entirely?
Wouldn't you? If you're starting a movement of people that are like, yeah, muggles are the worst and pure bloods.
Would he have that forethought at 11, though?
That's true. And also, it would maybe be hard to, because we learned that the pure blood community is very, very small and many of them actually do trace their lineage. I think it would be hard for Tom to lie and be like, no, you just missed me on the family tree there. I'm this person and this person's kid. So, yeah, but it again is a weird question. Like, did he successfully convince his followers that, like, it doesn't matter that I'm a half-blood because I'm a descendant of Salazar Slytherin and that's what matters?
I could see the power of being a descendant of Salazar Slytherin being significant, but also just I hate the people you hate and I have a lot of power and can do something about it.
And that's kind of where I'm going with this, that I think that the blood purity mindset obviously didn't start with Voldemort.
No.
He stoked that fire, but it was already there. And so did he maybe, much as he might believe in it himself, did he maybe see this as a way of getting power? Because the people who do buy into this blood purity thing are from old, probably rich, pure blood families.
Mm-hmm.
And so for Voldemort to kind of buy into that and find a way to unite these people and control them, is that just another way of him getting social capital and getting power? Because I don't think that his goal is ultimately the blood purity stuff. I think for Voldemort, the goal is power by whatever means. And if he can achieve the blood purity thing on the way there, that's great for him.
I could see that argument. Because of what this Tom Riddle says to Harry, when he says that, like, I don't care about the right. pure blood thing right now. You're my target.
Right, exactly. Because Harry is the only person, besides maybe Dumbledore, which he also flies off the handle when Harry is like, Dumbledore is better than you. They're the only ones who have really threatened Voldemort's power.
Yeah.
So like the rest of this, the killing mudbloods thing, it's all ancillary.
Because here's the
ego of it all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of like, this person threatened me. This person's known for defeating me. And that's what I care about now. I don't care about the mudbloods or muggleborns.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's something I think we will, of course, track as we learn more about Voldemort. But already we've got that hint of just like there's some complicated things going on here that maybe he is taking advantage of. What was it you said, that like you hate what I hate? So like I'm going to be your leader.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. He does, however, use the half-blood thing as a connection point between him and Harry. He points out all these similarities that Harry has already kind of put together himself. He says, both half-bloods, orphans, raised by muggles, probably the only two Parselmouths to come to Hogwarts since the great Slytherin himself. We even look something alike.
Yeah, he does use that as one of his many connections. And that's later touched on as part of the reason why he might have felt extra threatened by Harry as a baby.
Yeah. And there are more reasons for these connections that we can't really get into.
Address right now. Yeah.
They drop a big spoiler in book 7 that Voldemort is Harry's dad. And that's why Harry looks like him. No, that's obviously not actually it. Tom makes all kinds of threats to Harry. He says he'll be back with his dear mudblood mother soon, i.e. the basilisk will kill him. I guess wizards have a concept of the afterlife. This is a weird thing again because we have ghosts.
But, you know, Myrtle says then she came back.
Right.
You know, she had something to do, so she came back.
There's just like lines like this sometimes that it's like, does that work? We'll learn more about Ghost World later, but something I wanted to point out. Okay, I am jumping around a lot. I'm about done to talk about until, like, Harry fights the basilisk. So if I've skipped over something in the little info dump, please do add it in.
Well, you skipped over some of Harry being very sassy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Usually I try to make sure I give my due to sassy Harry, but go on, please.
This is very close to when he talks about when he like reveals that I am Voldemort.
Yeah. I am Lord Voldemort.
Yep. I am Lord Voldemort. And he goes on to say, well, he's talking about his father's name and how he was getting rid of it and be like creating a name that people would fear when he became the greatest sorcerer in the world. Mm-hmm. And Harry decides to say, you're not.
Yeah.
You are not the greatest sorcerer in the world. That's Dumbledore. And like digs his heels in about that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good old Harry being like, I'm going to rub your face in the dirt.
There was something else. But I did like that they point out he was just speaking at random. He was just like saying whatever came to his mind to try and like
stop him from getting the basilisk out. Yeah. But then he also has that thought of like, the longer I talk, the deader Ginny seems.
Yeah. He's still absorbing her. So this has to keep going.
Yeah.
So Fox shows up before the basilisk actually comes.
Yeah.
And it's carrying the sorting hat.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Riddle just laughs at him.
Yeah. I mean, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I mean, like,
not that you would be in this situation necessarily, but like if you're having beef with somebody and they pull out a raggedy old hat, it's like what?
Here's a like real world. We're looking at a peacock and an old baseball cap.
Yeah. Tom gets a kick out of it.
Yeah. He laughs for a while.
And then Harry pulls the hat on over his eyes to protect them from the basilisk. And then
a sword falls on his head.
How big is the sorting hat?
I think the sorting hat is more of like a portal-ish thing. So like the sword isn't fully there when it hits him on the head.
Okay.
Like, just the hilt hits him on the head
and
then
like
he can pull
through
it out the rest of the way when he takes the hat off.
I thought the hat was sword sized.
That would be a big,
I know,
or a very small sword.
It's actually a letter opener. There's a very good illustration on the website acciobrain.ligermagic.com, which is no longer live, but you can get archives, and it's an illustration of Dumbledore using the sword to open a letter, and it's titled "The Sword of Gryffindor Was Convenient Too." It makes me smile just thinking about it. But yes, the sword hits Harry in the head.
Yep. And then Harry uses it to start fighting, but not before, like I said in the chapter summary, Fox just pecks the eyes out of the basilisk.
Fox knows what's up.
Like this, reading this, it was a relatively gory chapter.
It's kind of a, like, there's a lot in this book.
Yeah.
There's the whole, like, wizard racism, and then, like, the petrification is kind of eerie, and then not only the pecking the eyes out, but Harry gets stabbed in the arm with the basilisk fang. Like, there's a lot here for a kiddie book.
Speaking of getting stabbed in the arm with the basilisk fang, or bitten, as some might say.
Okay.
Where does he stab the basilisk when he's getting bitten?
It's at the roof of its mouth.
So is he going up into...
That was my understanding.
Because at the end, when he removes the sword, he pulls it from the top of the basilisk's mouth.
Here, that doesn't make sense.
Retrieved the glistening sword from the roof of the basilisk's mouth. Oh, so he like reached into the mouth.
Yeah, and then pulled it down and out.
That's where I thought he was stabbing it. But the way I read it the second when they're talking about retrieving it, it sounded weird.
Yeah. No, he just grabbed the bare hilt, not hilt, the end of the sword, the pointy part.
Yeah.
To use the technical term, and just ripped the whole thing out, hilt and all. Yeah. Listen.
It's been a long day. It's still very hot in here.
It's so warm. Yeah, Harry stabs the basilisk, and the basilisk stabs him back, but he kills the basilisk. Fox heals Harry with its tears, and Tom also laughs about this. He's like, no, the basilisk. He's like, look, even your bird is crying.
He spends a while just like taunting Harry as he dies.
Yeah. I mean, he's pretty excited. This has been like his
goal. He's so happy. He's been spending months listening to Ginny complain so that Harry could die. And now he's just gloating. He's like, this can go slowly, as slow as you want. I have all the time in the world now.
He's getting rid of like the three biggest annoyances in his life right here. Ginny, he doesn't have to listen to her anymore. Harry, who defeated him, but also this is the younger version of him, so he's also alive. And most importantly, being dead.
Yes, he defeated death. He's going to be a real boy.
Yes, so Fox cries on Harry's wound. I did look if the tear thing tracked back to specific mythology or legends or anything. Not that I could find. It was an invention for the series. But of course, it does kind of fit in with the whole idea of phoenixes being in a cycle of like life, death, rebirth, renewal. They at least have some way of getting that to other people.
We'll get into it a little bit when we talk about Spell of the Week, which is not going to be Spell of the Week.
Okay.
But spoiler. Phoenixes are very overpowered in this universe.
And somehow it is never relevant again.
Yeah. For the most part.
Like, why would you just bring the phoenix with you all the time?
Because it's Dumbledore's phoenix.
So Dumbledore could just bring it all the time. Nobody ever has to die.
That'd be too convenient.
Okay. It's all very convenient.
Yes.
I know books have to be this way, but
it's very convenient. And we'll get into that because it's ridiculous to an extent.
Okay. I like Harry stabs the diary with a basilisk fang and ink spurts out of it. I really enjoy that visually. Like, instead of blood, it's ink. I think that's cool.
I mean, that's what the book is filled with.
I know.
And we know at the very least it's filled with a whole bottle because Harry poured a ton of it when his bag broke.
Do you think it was like green ink? But no, I like the idea of the diary is an animate object.
Mm-hmm.
And so animate objects usually have blood. This one spurts ink because that's like what's inside of it. I don't know. I just think it's cool visually.
Yeah, it is cool.
It worked for me.
And the chapter art is very fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I vibed with it.
Which got me thinking, like, I know Ginny wasn't completely dead, and that meant that Tom was not fully formed.
Mm-hmm.
Was Tom going to have to, like, keep and protect this diary for the rest of his life? Or
I imagine that the transfer of life would have been completed at some point.
Okay.
But so I don't have anything to back that up.
Yeah. Oh, well, okay. I mean, we'll find out later that
there's
he should have protected the diary better anyway. But
yes.
Also, Tom had the like ability to physically pick up Harry's wand, but did absolutely nothing to stop Harry from doing anything else.
He never even like used it at all. He just kind of held it.
Well, he got to draw his name.
Oh, yeah. That was important.
He
needed it for that.
He needed that wand to draw his name.
Yeah.
Also, he fires a shot at Fox.
Okay.
When he realizes, oh, right. I knew Phoenix Tears healed people. He shoots a spell off that sounds like a gunshot.
Yeah.
And then Phoenix, unhurt, just flies away.
Ginny wakes up And she's very upset. She tells Harry everything that she was going to tell him at breakfast, but Percy was there and everyone's going to hate her and she'll be expelled. And she says that she has been looking forward to coming to Hogwarts ever since Bill came.
Mm-hmm.
I looked up how much older Bill is than Ginny. We don't have concrete dates, but a Harry Potter sleuth, as Gladriel would call them on the Harry Potter lexicon, determined the Weasley children's birthdays, just using like various details from the books and interviews and stuff. They put Bill at being born in 1970, I believe in November of 1970, and Ginny being born in August of 1981,
mm-hmm.
which means that when Bill was 11 years old,
she was born.
She was like 3 months old.
In August?
She was born in August.
Yeah. And then she started a month later.
1981. Oh, so a month. Yeah, a month.
Yeah.
This doesn't work for me.
This was a very clever way of saying that she's wanted to go since she was born.
Okay.
For her whole life.
I mean, yes, it is. It is like she grew up in a house where her brothers every couple years or whatever went away to school for a long time and heard all these great stories about what was happening at Hogwarts. But
no, I know.
She was a month old.
And she had that cognitive ability to realize, oh, Bill is my brother. Bill is gone at a cool place I want to be at.
Ginny was a baby genius.
Yes.
Who never gained new knowledge past that to know not to trust a diary that talks back to you. Yeah, it just, that was weird to me. Harry and Ginny go meet up with Ron, and Ron obviously asks a bunch of questions, one of the first of which is, why do you have a sword?
I liked, where did that bird come from?
Yeah, Ron's great. And then Ron asks, I don't remember what he asks specifically, but Harry decides not to say that Tom Riddle was Voldemort the whole time. And it says, not in front of Ginny anyway. Why?
He decides not to say that Ginny was the one that did all the stuff.
No.
Yeah, that was the focus.
No. Okay, I'm going to get the actual specific line because this bothered me. Because Ginny's been asleep this whole time.
He didn't think it was a great idea to tell Ron yet who'd been opening the chamber. Not in front of Ginny anyway.
I read that as, okay, I see what the confusion here is. You think he didn't think it was a great idea to tell Ron Ginny had been opening the chamber.
Yes.
I read this as he didn't think it was a good idea to tell Ron yet that it was actually Voldemort that was opening the chamber.
I read that as Ginny because, you know, get her safe and then talk about like, oh, she like okay. You could, because it's going to take a while to explain. She was
your little sister killed everyone, or not killed, petrified anyone.
Petrified everyone because have, she was under control of Lord Voldemort.
Right. And have Ron like freak out and be like, what?
Yeah. I don't think his concern was like, well, I won't tell her the extreme danger that she's well aware she was in was because of Lord Voldemort.
Okay. But like, we're not going to hear a lot about Ginny's story past this, at least related to these events. Does somebody tell Ginny that she was, I mean, I know that they did, but like who? Who sits down with Ginny and is like, you were controlled by Lord Voldemort?
I could see Harry doing that at a later date. When? But like,
we don't get that scene.
We don't get that scene, but still he's worried about right now. She's upset and she's ashamed about what she thinks she did.
Right.
She's put
she's
this
shaken
all on herself.
Up. She's weak. Yes.
You know, get her to complete safety. And then worry about it.
Sure. Okay. I read that differently, but I'll accept your explanation. It frustrates me that Ginny's side of the story is not taken further. And that is getting into later stuff, so we don't have to bring it up right now. The next opportunity to bring it up won't come until book 5. But like, the impact of all these events doesn't seem to really matter as far as Ginny goes.
Yeah. We only see what Harry sees, and Harry does not seem to care.
Yeah. It just bothers me a little bit. I think Ginny gets the short end of the stick, certainly in the movies, but a little bit in the books too.
I mean, she's like,
she's just like forgotten about for entire books sometimes.
Well, it's like, oh, this is my friend's little sister.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who was possessed by Lord Voldemort once.
And I rescued and killed the basilisk over.
Like these, that's...
Yeah, I mean, he cares about her, but more like, this is my friend's sister.
I guess. Okay. Fox gives him a ride out of the chamber.
Yeah, we gotta pause on that. For a whole lot of reasons. First of all, Lockhart's still there.
Yes.
He's completely...
I was going to talk about Lockhart in relation to this, but go on.
He's completely...
He's messed up.
Yeah, he has no memory at all. He doesn't know who he is, doesn't know who anyone is. And Ron is really mean to him, but in a very fun way.
I mean, like, how long do you think Harry was... How long do you think it took for Harry to go to the room of the chamber with...
He walked for a while.
He walked for a while. He talked... He gabbed with Tom.
For a while.
For quite some time.
Fought a basilisk.
Came back to life after the basilisk almost killed him. Then walked back with Ginny. Ron's been there with
for
Lockhart.
For a while. Just dealing with a crazed Lockhart. A person he already did not like.
Yeah.
And now he's just dealing with a little toddler.
While also trying to, like, move heavy boulders.
Yes.
Yeah. Ron is permitted to be exasperated here.
So when Fox does, like, present itself at the exit, I guess. Like, I guess he's flying by the pipe to leave.
Uh-huh.
Ron is confident and saying, like, hey, he wants you to grab on.
Yeah.
How would you...
Fox is, like, wiggling his little tail.
He's wiggling. So, like, if a bird flaps in front of you and wiggles its tail, you should grab it.
Yeah, I mean, I've read Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. I know how birds work.
But yeah, so he does that, and Harry gives instructions of, like, all right, everybody hold on to each other.
I want to know how he determines who holds whose hand.
So that's the biggest thing. There's a part of this that makes me think that Fox magically turned them lighter, because...
I think Fox can just carry really heavy loads.
But Harry is grabbing onto Fox's tail with both hands. Ron, with one hand, is grabbing onto Harry's cloak.
Mm-hmm. What's the problem?
With the other hand, mm-hmm, he's holding onto Ginny.
Yeah.
So Harry is carrying on his neck the weight of Ron. Ron is carrying with one hand the weight of Ginny. And Ginny, with one hand, is carrying the weight of Lockhart, adult man. And everyone above her is carrying all that weight as well.
And everyone's just yanking on Harry's neck.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That is...
Lockhart should have been first, because he's the heaviest. If not for the fact that they're magically lighter, because Harry struggled to hold Ginny's weight at all. And now Ginny is holding the weight of Lockhart, and Ron is holding the weight of Ginny and Lockhart.
I took Lockhart going last as, if he falls off,
who cares?
Yeah, it's just him.
But supposedly Ginny is carrying him.
I am Lord Voldemort. There's some wacky stuff in this chapter.
But we get the line of, an extraordinary lightness seemed to spread through his whole body.
Oh, okay.
And the next second, in a rush of wings, they were flying upwards through a pipe. So the best explanation is that Fox was able to make them magically lighter.
Fox casted a spell.
Non-verbally, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, you never know. A bird call could be a spell.
Yep.
Yeah. Lockhart says, this is just like magic. How do memory charms work? Because Lockhart is able to speak English perfectly well, have a concept of magic, and have a concept of what's normal and what isn't, which does not include the magical world. What parts of his memory have been removed?
Like, the important parts.
But he still can speak perfect English?
Yes. Because, I think, like, he was trying to, like, he says that when he casts the spell on Harry and Ron, when he goes to cast the spell on Harry and Ron, he says that, oh, you know, they went insane from seeing Ginny's mangled corpse. That was his plan.
Right.
So he was planning to cast a very powerful one that was going to leave them with nothing.
Except
except
full control of the language.
Yes.
And like, you only establish what's normal and what isn't in society by seeing it. So like, when they screened the first movie and it was a train rushing toward the screen, everybody thought the train was going to come off the screen and kill them, because they didn't have a conception yet of what is and isn't normal in a movie theater. You following me?
Yeah.
So like,
but if you show something to a toddler and you say, is that weird? They will give you a yes or no, regardless of what their experience is.
But like, if it's the first time, I don't know. I don't know. I didn't like this.
He's purely comedic relief at this point.
I know.
And I did like when Harry is giving these instructions of like who's holding whose hand. He says, Professor Lockhart. Ron goes, he means you.
Oh, poor Ron.
I'm picturing Ron spending at least a half hour just babysitting Lockhart while he, the child, is moving these boulders.
Yeah, because he does say that he told Lockhart to like go sit in a corner somewhere, not even just like, you need to help me move these rocks. He's just like, I can't deal.
You're not just helping at all. Just leave.
Yeah. It's very good.
Yeah.
And then Myrtle offers to share her toilet with Harry if he had died in the chamber. She's like, I was hoping you would come and share my toilet.
Yeah. Just
which is very sweet.
You're alive.
Yeah. Yeah. It's classic misogynistic nonsense. The hero saves the day and gets the girl and the toilet.
Yeah. And gets a lovely
invitation
to a toilet.
Yeah. And then they go to McGonagall's office or something.
Yeah. Fox. By the way, Fox is also glowing golden.
Yeah. Why not?
This whole time. like, they no longer have to use Lumos to light the way. Fox is also a nightlight.
Fox.
Are we going to do this at the beginning and end of this?
It sounds like you say Fox.
Fox. We're saying the same thing.
Okay.
Fox.
That's what it sounded like you said.
Fox.
Okay. All right. I got it now. yes. And that's how the chapter ends.
Yeah.
Anything we didn't cover?
No, we got to the last words.
Awesome. We're perfect. It is time
for
Spell of the Week. Why have a sound effect even when I can just make them myself?
The sound that you did just hear, regardless of how nice it sounds, that did come directly out of Cassie's mouth.
Yes. I made it myself and then put it onto the YouTube audio library of free for use. It's like,
actually, a good chunk of that is Cassie's impressions.
It's like when they make animal noises or something for a TV show or a movie or something. It's actually just a real weird person making those noises. I've been called in many times.
A real weird person.
Yeah.
Making those noises.
All right. Spell of the week. I mean, you hear me. I make a lot of noise.
You do make noise. So spell of the week, I wanted to get into Phoenix Tears. And to an extent, Phoenix's
my favorite
in
energy
general.
Drink. I googled Phoenix healing to find out if this came from like a myth or a legend or something. I got a lot of holistic medicine like organizations. Go
that
on.
That sounds right.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah. Phoenix's natural healing.
Yeah.
Their tears are pearly in color.
Milky, would we say?
I guess, like, I think of pearls as like almost
like a
grayish
pearl necklace.
White, you know, not quite like a pure white milk.
A good pearl is white.
Yeah, I guess. Pearly white.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense.
Yeah. You heard it here, folks. Fox cries milk.
Healing milk.
Yeah.
It's good for your bones.
I don't like that.
Okay.
Tell me about the milk.
No. So Phoenix Tears apparently are the only known antidote for basilisk venom.
Okay. I mean,
which may be because we only
really
get
studying.
Harry's yeah, we only get Harry's experiences in this universe, and he didn't really run into a lot more basilisks. But also, basilisks are very rare.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you either die or a bird cries on you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But also, they can bring you back even from the brink of death, similar to unicorn blood, but they don't have the side effect of being cursed forever.
Is that, what's the sauce on that? Like, does Dumbledore say that when Harry sees Fox, like, be reborn in his office?
I'm seeing it's supposed to be in chapter 12, the Polyjuice Potion.
Time to search the old ebook here. Here we go. Fox is a phoenix, Harry. Phoenixes burst into flame when it is time for them to die and are reborn from the ashes. Fascinating creatures, phoenixes. They can carry immensely heavy loads.
Mm-hmm.
Their tears have healing powers, and they make highly faithful pets. The brink of death thing is not said. I feel like they say that in the movie.
Very possible.
Are you reading from the Harry Potter wiki?
I am.
All right. That is problem number 6,000 that I have with the Harry Potter wiki.
I will say that I would say Harry was on the brink of death.
Sure. Yeah. His vision was like going out. It reminds me of this time that I passed out at the mall.
After donating blood?
No, this was... No, I hadn't donated blood that day. This was a long time ago. I was like 16 or something.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just in the mall and I got real sweaty and warm and dizzy. And then I walked to the bathroom and sat on the toilet for a while and was okay. But that was the first time I had ever gotten faint. And it felt a lot like what Harry is experiencing. And I always think about what that journey must have looked like, me walking from the store I was in to the bathroom, because I was not alert. Yeah, I don't know. You've seen me pass out. I get weird. Everybody gets weird when they pass out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Understandably so.
Yeah. Just like the description of Harry's like vision going out and all that. It was just remind me of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But way back on track.
Yeah. This is why I have to like lead us through the events of the book, because when anyone else speaks, I just do my best to derail the conversation. And
so how is you leading the train?
Because I can't
better?
Interrupt myself.
You still find a way to take us off course.
All right. Okay. Spell of the week.
Yeah. What I've been trying to do. So obviously there's not very much more about Phoenix Tears, but some other things that Phoenixes can do, which I thought were kind of ridiculous and mostly just plot convenient. It specifies that they are not affected by the gaze of a basilisk.
Mm-hmm. Plot convenient, for sure.
Very plot convenient. Its song, the Phoenix Song, will inspire courage in good people and fear in bad people. I think that's written slightly better.
What Hold is on. The source of that? Fox's song is described as weird music.
Yeah.
That was strange phrasing to me.
Yeah. Will increase the courage of those who are good and strike fear into the hearts who are evil.
What is the citation on that? Is it Fantastic Beasts?
Fantastic Beasts.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
The book, right?
Yes.
Okay. It's been a long time since I read it, so.
Another way phoenixes are very overpowered are that they can burst into flames and take whoever is holding them along with them, similar to apparition. And they can also leave messages by bursting into flames, disappearing, and just leaving a feather behind. So I hope you're excited to see how that plays out in the books in the future.
Can't wait.
Oh yeah.
Cool. So that's spell of the week.
That is sure a spell.
Phoenix Tears of the Week. Sorry, Phoenix Milk. I didn't mean to disrespect folks like that.
Just Phoenix.
Yes. Okay, that's spell of the week. Which brings us to our emails.
Does it bring us to our emails?
We have an email.
We have an email.
From Viv.
Hi, Viv.
Viv says, hello, Joe and Cassie. I am Viv, and I just want to say how much I love your podcast. I've always loved Harry Potter and was happy when I found your podcast. You're the best, Viv. P.S. My favorite book is Prisoner of Azkaban. I just want to give a nice shout out to Viv for sending us this lovely email and sharing that with us. It just brightened my day to see that.
Yeah. Thank you for sending that in. I hope. Yeah. You wanted this and not just to email us.
I am very excited to read Viv's favorite book, Prisoner of Azkaban. It's coming very soon.
Yeah.
And I hope that it will also be enjoyable for me.
Cassie historically has not enjoyed the book, but really likes the movie.
Yes. So we'll see how it shakes out now that I'm older and wiser and more decrepit.
Cassie has daddy issues, and they're heavily affected by her liking of this book.
Dare you roast me like this on Father's Day? Yes, I'm very excited to read Prisoner of Azkaban.
Obviously, you should cut that out.
I'm not going to. Viv, thank you for your email. We enjoyed it. If you want to be an awesome listener like Viv, you can send an email to owlpost@pontrificustotalis.com. I was about to say .net. I don't know why. It's pontrificustotalis.com. Owlpost@that. You can follow us on Twitter @Podtrificus and like and subscribe. I don't know what is, you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or whatever, wherever you listen to podcasts. Podchaser is a great place to do it where you're not owned by your Apple overlords. And yeah, just, you know, share the podcast with a friend if you enjoy it. That's the best. I like that when people do that. It's so warm in here. I'm very sweaty. And you can join us next time for the final chapter of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, chapter 18,
Dobby's Reward.